Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is part two, show 43, part two with Graham Young from the film podcast network.com and the homemade camera podcast. He comes to talk with us again and finish up what we left off last week. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 43. I have Andrew, the intrepid thespian Bartran, with us.
The Lith Lord.
And we have Graham back for part two. I guess we're going to call this part two, show 43.
Yeah, sure.
Part two of his ramblings.
Rantings. Rantings. I went to rant.
So how was everybody's week? 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks since we talked, I guess.
Sounds like a bird.
Mine's been good. Yeah. I've been working since we last talked. I got the new 3D printer up and running and calibrated. And
sounds like a lot.
Yeah, well, and I'm building some new tiny little Lumen cameras. And I need another one. I need another printer because they run so slowly.
What you wanted to talk about Lumen prints, didn't you?
Right, I did.
My week's been fine. It's fine.
You can't. Oh yeah, sorry, Andrew.
No, it's not all
right,
about
go
me.
On, Andrew.
Not,
come on, all... let's hear what you got. This...
on a podcast, let me tell.
I haven't done much really. I shot a bit with the Harman Titan 4x5 for the FP4 party. You're not on Twitter. Yeah. You're not on Twitter, Corey. But
no.
You know, so I don't know if you've ever taken part in any of these parties. The FP4 party has started. So last week was shoot week. This week is develop week, and then you share it online. But I only shot one. Cool. I just had one sheet of FP4. When I opened my box of FP4 in the darkroom, there was just one sheet in there, so I could only load one sheet, and the rest of it is FOMA 100.
I have.
Well, you could probably pass it off.
Well, I know I'm an honest chap, you see. So
yeah.
I had five sheets left, so I...
Now I've said it out loud, I can't pass it off as FP4. Yeah. Sorry, Corey, go on.
No, I was going to say, that happened to me too when I opened mine up. I had five sheets left, so I have one in my
sheets
box turtle. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then I have two 4x5 holders. So that's four sheets. I've shot three of those. I have one more. I think I want to go do that this afternoon if it stops raining and develop that.
When is the end of the FP4 party, or when's
well,
the end of the week?
The first, I'm not sure. Maybe today. I think it's, if you were shooting it today, I'm sure they wouldn't mind, really. I'm not sure. It was either yesterday or today. And
well,
then
I have.
They do in 3 week cycles, so they'll have that shoot week, develop week, and share week, and then I think they'll run it again. Whether they run it straight after and do it for a few times, I can't remember now.
I have the only FP4 that I have right now is 2.25 by 3.25 film for those old small like speed graphics.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, I think it's mid-80s film. And I had a bunch of those film holders, so I made a lensed camera with one of those, 3D printed a lensed camera, kind of based on the travel wide concept, if you guys remember the 4x5 travel wide.
Yep.
It's I have shot it once, and I could shoot it again, and that would be an impetus to for me to
I think
get
you maybe
camera going.
You maybe need to finish this podcast quickly and get out with it while you've still got some daylight.
That's I have one of those mini speed graphics too, the baby Graflex or whatever it is. And I want to do that. I want to put a pinhole in the front of it.
Right.
I just got to get around to doing it. I love those little film holders. They're so cool. They're like little miniature. And I have a whole box of that film too. Actually, but I don't have the Ilford. I have the, what is it, the Arista?
Uh-huh.
That brand?
Could be.
So I put an eBay alert on 2.25 by 3.25 film, and it took like 3 weeks before the first batch came up, and I was the only bidder.
Well,
and yeah, so it's rare and not in demand.
Right.
Well, now you'll be starting a trend now, a bit like Mike Gutterman with his APS revival.
Yeah. Yeah, or those classic lens folks, you know.
So, sorry for the diversion. Lumen cameras, boxes?
Oh, yeah, okay.
What's all that about?
Yeah, you were, you interviewed Nicole of One-on-One, what is it? Hang on a second.
One-on-One Art Portraits.
Yep. Yeah. And she talked about going through the Lumen process and she even mentioned some of the system where you can wet the paper and it comes up quicker. But I had on the Homemade Camera Podcast Flickr group, maybe 6 months ago, you all know him as Cola Matorn, Jonas or Yo Jonas.
Yes, I'm certainly familiar with him.
Flickr. Yeah. And he had put together what was essentially the same kind of Lumen box and shot onto paper, you know, with an 8-hour exposure. And I really liked what he had done. And it was, I think he had used like a projector lens or something. I think it was projector lens. And that was already in my brain, just kind of festering away. And then when Nicole talked about it, I went, okay, that's it. I'm doing this. And so I put together a 4x5 camera, a 4x5 body that I could screw an M39 lens into one end of. And the idea was I was going to be, it's 3D printed. So I was going to print a cone for some of my 4x5 lenses, but I just wanted to do an M39 lens quickly to try it out. And part of the deal was Ethan Moses from Camera Dactyl had mentioned that the Jupiter 8, a lens that I have, which is a Soviet era, Leica or Zeiss copy. The classic lens folks are gonna
be
on my throat for being wrong.
They'll listen to this.
They're always banging on about.
That's right.
VOX 44s and Jupiter 8s and God knows what. I don't know.
Right, and they're talking about lenses, and we know that you don't need a lens to make a picture. No. You know, certainly not. But he had said. That a Jupiter 8 would cover 6x7. So I put it on I put 4x5 paper in and put this lens on it. And I was getting these round circles. So I was getting about a 70mm round circle in the middle of 4x5. And I just kind of got hooked. I just kind of, it was just one of those things where, oh, this looks good. I mean, and so I've been playing around with that ever since. And I now have this little camera that if you go to my Instagram, which is Graham Homemade Camera, on my Instagram, you'll see it. It looks like a little GoPro with an old Soviet lens on it.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, and that's my little my current Lumen box that I'm using.
But to get 8-hour exposures, don't you need a tiny hole?
Yeah. Yeah, well, yes.
Like a pinhole camera, for example.
If you want to do it like an 8-hour exposure, yeah, certainly. But what I found is if you open this wide open, about 25 minutes will do. And if you follow the guy who's kind of leading this charge is a guy out of Spain named Hoderman. And Hoterman, he's on Instagram, and it's Joterman. And he also sells on Etsy. He sells these little lumen boxes that have their, you know, dedicated lenses and all this type of thing.
Is that the guy who Nicole mentioned and referenced when she bought her camera from?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's how I got to him, was the fact that she had mentioned him.
Okay.
So see, your podcast does stuff.
Somebody listens.
Yeah, right.
All right. Exactly. Yay. You
know, and I'm sure there are, you know, dozens of people are saying, me too. Okay. So anyway, Hoterman sells these things, and he's got this deal where you go out in the field with your paper and your film and a little box of water. You know, you can put it in, you know, some little, you know, sealed box of water, and you drop the paper in the water, then put it in your camera, and he exposes for like 8 minutes. And that speeds it up. Now, I'm not sure exactly what the deal is with it speeding up, because I haven't gone out really much in the field. I've done it at home where I, you know, wet the paper, go out and expose it, then bring it back in inside. But he looks like he has a video on YouTube where he's just like walking down some rail tracks, and he's out, you know, and he takes the paper out in the sunshine, dips it in the water, and then puts it in the camera and exposes it. Now, I don't know what he does then to digitize it,
is he doing pinhole, or is he using a regular lens?
That's with a lens. And these are like, these are not like camera lenses. They're like lens elements.
Gotcha.
You know, so he's found a source of lens elements that I'm kind of trying to track down myself.
A magnifying glass.
Yeah. Well, a magnifying glass would work, but I mean, just think if your focal length on a magnifying glass is 35 millimeters and you're using a magnifying glass that's like 45 millimeters, you know, that's like that 0.75, you know. So you could get a lot of light in there. He's not using lenses that are anywhere near that big. He's using lenses that are probably F2. I'm going to guess, just, you know, from what I see. And he sells these boxes on Etsy, and they're cardboard, and they're cut out, and you have to go through the process of folding them and make them kind of like the pinhole that,
Ham Camera Company.
Ham?
Yeah. Ham. Right. The
pin box.
Right.
Pin box.
So it's that same kind of deal. And you just get these images that are considerably different from what you see on, you know, on other paper negatives, because, you know, if you're shooting F2, you know, you've got a very short depth of field, but then you have to kind of figure out where that focal plane, you know, what that focal distance is. And if it's, you know, if it's infinity focus or it's, my brain.
Almost like flipping the lens on a.
Right. Yeah.
You have to do some trial and error to work out where that.
Right.
Sweet and spot the edges, is.
The edges of the image are going to be really soft, and it's kind of fun, because it is, it's a no developed process. It's an instant camera after 8 minute exposure. And I've been experimenting with the Film Lab app and digitizing with that. And I've found that it adds considerable amount of grain to the image, and that's okay. These kind of images really work well with a considerable amount of grain. So,
How would you think it'll transfer to doing pinhole? I mean, it'll just have to have much longer exposures, of course.
Well, I mean, for pinhole, it's essentially the same thing as solarography, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think so.
I got you. Yeah.
No developer use, so it's the same thing, isn't it? It's like the solar can or something. It's the same sort of process, Corey, except that you probably need to leave it out for a few weeks.
Right. Well, but but now, I mean, we're talking about when we take when we use film generally, we're using pinholes that have an f of, you know, 200, you know, let's just say an average of F200, yep. You know, F150 or F200, somewhere in there. You could use a larger pin, a larger hole, and bring it down to, say, F85, somewhere in there, where an F85 is almost impossible for a pinhole camera, right? Because you can't get a short enough exposure, you know, in
gonna have quick fingers.
Right. Yeah, you'd have to figure a mechanical or something, you know, because that's down a tenth of a second in Sunny 16, somewhere right in that range. And I'm not looking at an exposure guide, so if I'm off by a little bit, don't roast me on Twitter or anything. But so that's kind of the range at which we're talking, right? But if you're shooting onto film that has ISO, I don't know, what is film, or excuse me, onto paper, we're talking ISO 1, right?
Could be on that
for paper.
Well, on that direct positive five. Paper, maybe 1 or something. I think somebody was telling us. I forget now. My mind has gone.
Yeah.
But it could be anywhere between. Was it Tony? I'm sure he's shooting at ISO Tony. 1, unless I'm just making that up. But normally three. Let's say 3 to.
Okay, so 3, you know, so you're talking about, you know, you're back into the couple of minutes kind of range, and then you have reciprocity failure. I don't know what the reciprocity failure on Ilford Multigrade 4 is, you know, which is what I'm using.
Oh my God! How dare you?
So I mean, you're getting into that kind of reasonable territory. If you just make that aperture just a little bit larger, and I don't know where the sweet spot is, and it, you know, and it depends on really how much light's coming through. But I'm, you know, okay, so maybe you're getting to 30 minutes, maybe you're getting to an hour, with a very large pinhole, like a pinhole, you know, on a say a medium format camera, the same size pinhole you would use on, you know, like an 8x10. So that kind of comparison in size. Right. I think it's something that could be done. I haven't done any experiments in that direction, but I think it would be a lot of fun to try it. And I'm going to try some without any lens at all and see what comes up. Now, you guys talked about the Ilford Direct Positive. And I tried that. I have a box of Ilford Direct Positive, and I tried that and just turned all the paper a uniform pink. So I don't know if I pre-exposed it but it did not seem to work at all. So
for that solar lumen type process where there's no developer. Yeah, right. Maybe you just need to use conventional darkroom paper. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've been using so far. Yeah, Ilford Multigrade, and then an Arista, which could also be Ilford Multigrade because Arista just repackaged, you know, Freestyle just repackages. So anyway, I've been having a ton of fun with that. I've built this little camera, this one that I talked about, that looks kind of like it's about the size of a GoPro. And I bought built that camera with the idea for economic use of an 8x10. So what I did to figure out what size its final image would be in it, and it's about 5x6 centimeters. And what I did was I took an 8x10 and I divided it into 4 horizontally and 4 vertically. And then I created a little cutting jig. And so essentially I get 16 images from an 8x10 sheet. And if that is not cheap enough for you, you're not. Yeah. I mean, that's about as cheap as you get, you know? You know, that's about 300, what is it? 280 images or something from a 25 sheet envelope of paper. So that gets down pretty cheap.
And I'm really liking small prints. You know, Corey, you've been into contact printing for a long time. But as I've been playing around with lift printing, I didn't want to spend too much money, really, because I'm experimenting. So I bought a packet of 10 sheets of FOMA 132 paper, and that was just that size, that rather odd size, 9.5 inches by 12. And if I fold that in half and then half again, I get four sheets that are a little bit bigger than 4x5. And the prints that I'm making on those from pinhole cameras, from Holgers, mainly Holgers and pinhole cameras, the prints have this really sort of jewel-like quality, and just it's lovely mm-hmm. to just hold those small prints in your hand.
Yeah, well, that's, I like it too, especially the 4x5. I think, I mean, 4x5 is not too small to be viewing yet if you can get close to it, but bigger is better, sure. But 4x5 with the ease of just developing it and just doing quick.
Yeah, well, I was placing my negatives in the enlarger just to give me a bit of control. But you know, the final image is.
Oh yeah.
In fact, on some of the negatives, I was using a portion of the negative, because that's what the composition I liked. So the enlarger does allow you to do that.
Mm-hmm. I wish I had a. A 4x5 enlarger.
Big old boys. But, my one's a big old boy. Devere 504.
Yeah. I couldn't. Even if I had it, I still couldn't use it. I mean, it's, you know, so cold outside. Right. So
Graham. Well,
I was going to just say one more thing about the 4x5 size. Is if you have a 4x5 piece of paper, do you remember we used to get 4x6 prints? You know, those were the bigger prints, mm-hmm. and we would hand them around. You know, you'd hand somebody a pack of, you know,
end prints.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, this is great.
Right. Yeah, and those are perfect. And I kind of miss that kind of presentation of photography.
You need to join Monty
somebody pack.
Graham, you need to join Monty Smith's postcard exchange that I plug every week.
Mm-hmm.
And
I do.
It's just beautiful to get. I mean, I use the Ilford postcard paper, but some of these little lith prints that I've made, I'm going to just write on the back of those now, stick a stamp on, and post those to folks, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And to receive those in the mail is just wonderful.
I could send the lumen prints, you know, the direct lumen print.
You could.
But then it would be completely black or just it kind of turns a blue. Yeah, here I have one right here that's sitting on my desk. It just kind of turns a blue.
You can put it in an envelope, but that kind of defeats the object, doesn't it?
Right. But I could say this was a beautiful picture of a flower. I'll write that on the back.
This was the greatest picture you've ever seen. By the time you get it, it'll be gone.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
and then you have to figure out some way to put sound to it so that it goes wah, wah, wah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, you're going to have me, this is the song about the greatest song ever written. This isn't the song. Yeah, that was the Jack Black and, oh, I forget what the name of it is.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So anyway, yeah, I would, I've been looking at the 4x5 the postcard paper, and
that stuff is fun. But
yeah, I need to set up a contact printer. Is really what I need to do. That's my next step, and then I can start looking at that.
So Graham,
yeah,
I'll try again.
Yes,
I've been knowing that you were coming back on and. Looking at some work on Facebook and Twitter, our dear friend and friend of the show, Alex Purcell at Grainy Blur, he's just been playing around with a Zorky 4K. I think it's 4K. And he's created something called a Zorkinstein. And Sandeha Lynch, who's certainly a friend of your homemade camera podcast, and I've known Sandy for some time. Never met him, but I've known him on the forums and on film and darkroom user websites for many, many years. And he's a really talented guy, a real craftsman and clever chap. And I think he lives somewhere, maybe lives somewhere near Alex, or maybe he's in Wales or something. I'm not sure, but I think Alex knows him. And so I've seen these pictures. And he's created something with a Praktika FX2, and he calls that a Pinorama. So it occurred to me to ask you to kick off a discussion. What are the advantages of using a 35mm camera as a basis for a pinhole conversion?
Well, the first...
Making your own pinhole.
The first thing is it's easy, and it's almost no investment. And the reason why I say that is you can get all of these body caps, you know, a body cap with a pinhole in the center of it. Now, I think that Alex made his sit a little bit back in, so he got a shorter focal length on it.
Yeah, with a normal camera, you'd be around that 50mm focal distance,
well,
I would think.
No. The 50mm includes, the lens.
To use your term, or the guys on the camera.
Flange focal distance.
Focal distance, yeah.
You're right. So Nikon has the longest, which I think is, isn't Nikon's about 36mm out? 30 or something?
Yeah.
And the shortest would be, I just looked it up because I just had to figure it out. Like M39 lenses or Leica M lenses are 38-39mm. So that is, or excuse me, 28-29mm, not 38. So that's a wide angle, but it's not the kind of wide angle that if you're, if you're looking at the 6x6 Reality So Subtle or the Terrapin or one of those other ones, those are much wider. Those are about 20 to 23 millimeter focal distance. So if you wanted to do that, you could build, the thing that I would do is probably take a film can, the plastic can that the cartridge, the film cassette, the 35mm film cassette comes in. If you get one of the black ones, cut that so it'll recess in maybe 10mm, and then put your pinhole in the back of that. Now, you might get some vignetting, so you might have to play a little bit with to see how far back you can set it.
But you're still going to have to fit the diameter of one of those film cans is still going to be smaller than the aperture of the hole in the camera, isn't it? Where the lens would normally sit.
Right. Yeah. You could just tape that in, electrical tape or gaffer's tape, there's the big problem is if you're working with an SLR, you have the mirror that's going to come up and it's going to contact the back of that thing. Either you mirror lock up, you could tape up your mirror. Depends on, if it's Minolta X370 or X7A, which, is a $25 camera, who cares? Tape it up, and you could do that. If you damage it, so what? It's a $25 camera.
So maybe we ought to think about rangefinders and old Soviet style rangefinders that no one cares about.
I know that, I know the pictures that Alex got with his, they look great. That one with two people standing
I commented
room.
On that just a little while ago. That was my favorite.
Yeah,
it looked, that's a great... I'm imagining cool it yeah, as his nice. Grandparents. It would be...
Right.
Alex, if it's not your grandparents, and your grandparents are... You're blessed to still have them with you. Go and find them and set your grandparents up in that same shot, because that's just an awesome picture.
Right.
And he's using his... Yeah. His camera is a Zorki 4K, maybe. And 15...
I have no idea what that is.
It's a Russian...
Contex copy.
15mm focal length, so he's recessed it quite. If you look at his photographs, Alex, at Grainy Blur, of his camera, you see his nice Russian rangefinder, which he's then corrupted with a load of black tape and somehow got his pinhole to sit back. I don't know whether... I'm sure I've read how he did it, but I can't quite remember. But it's given him a 15mm focal length, and his pinhole is 0.1 of a millimeter.
Right.
So, you know, because obviously he's quite close to that film plane. And I think he's, I think he's used a reality so subtle pinhole.
Pinhole.
I mean,
he's a busy guy, that Alex. Man.
So, jeez. So the huge advantage of using this 35 millimeter camera is that all of your film advance is there. Plus, if it is a focal plane shutter like what you have here, then you and it has reliable 1 second exposure time, then that's pretty close to what you're going to get with F-150 on a Sunny 16. Now, you know, if you're good at using a cable release and or just even, you know, you can, I do a lot of hand holding pinhole cameras, but you can, you know, set it to bulb and just go 3/4 of a second or whatever, you know, you feel is the way to go with that. So that's your advantage with a 35 millimeter camera. And he did, now that I look at it, I'm looking at the pictures on Flickr. He did some pretty destructive surgery to it. He cut off the lens mount. So this ain't going back.
He got aggressive. We'll say
right,
he got
exactly.
aggressive.
Exactly. And so that's not and he even used the Mr. Pinhole calculator. Although there's something a little bit off that he has a screenshot of this. But he has his film dimension is 43 millimeters, but that's not the film dimension. 36 millimeters should be the film dimension there.
36
right.
by 24,
or actually,
right?
I guess it that's should be for... the diagonal one. I don't know what that is off the top of my head. But the hypotenuse of the width by the height. But this is, you know, I mean, it's pinhole. We're not talking, well, okay. I guess actually I'm putting my pinhole photography aesthetic out there. And that is, if I'm working pinhole, I'm not calculating down to the second. I'm ballparking everything. I'm seat of the pantsing everything. And that's what is what I love about pinhole. Now, I know you had Todd Schlemmer on who was talking about he calculates every shot. And yes, he gets many more good shots than I get. But
he has way less. He has way less fun.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean that if you're, he's got an engineer's mind. I can tell by the way his cameras are put together. Yeah. But that works for them, and that's fine. And that it's all good, right? but what you know, so if you have that already set up, you have all those mechanics already set up. You don't have to build any of the other stuff. You don't have to build a film transport. You don't have to make it. It's coming to you light tight. You know, even though you're cutting holes in it, you know. Have to fix that. But
on Alex's album in his Flickr site, which is called Frankenstein, Zorkenstein, he's got this picture of his camera, and he's virtually dismantled it, hasn't he? It's in bits, and there's a yellow bowl with all the bits in. We should have said, "Hey, Alex, put it all back together." I dare you. I bet you have a screw left over. But right. Is there not an easier way than dismantling your camera? Can you?
Yeah, absolutely. Is his Flickr grainy blur as well?
Yeah, I think he's at grainy blur. Okay. On Flickr. It might just be Alex Purcell.
Yeah, I got nothing, but I'm not getting anything for anybody here.
Yeah, he's Alexpurcell on Flickr.
Oh, two L's, maybe that was the thing.
And you'll see the first picture up is his picture of his Zorkenstein camera, and then the picture of it in bits.
Yeah, there we go.
And then the awesome pictures he's got from it, which are just great. I love them.
Yeah. Okay.
I like those too. We're clapping for you, Alex.
We like it. So, I mean, that's even when I was still... before I came back to film. I came back to film in 2013. And before that, I had body caps for my DSLRs. And I have a body, I have a Leica body cap too that I don't think I've ever shot on, you know, with a pinhole is what I'm trying to say, a body cap with a pinhole.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But you could just take a normal body cap. You could get your, as you said, your black film canister and
right.
cut it down with your pinhole in, and then fix that into the body cap with some glue and tape. And surely that's the same thing. I can't.
Right.
Alex, why have you taken your camera to bits to do this?
Well,
I'll tell you why, because we talked about that one show about getting the pinhole closer to
yeah.
the film plane so that it'll get a little
but
bit get, more.
You take
of that.
Your body cap and then cut a hole, which yeah. is the diameter of the film canister. Cut that film canister down to give you a recess, a bit like a recessed lens board on a 5x4 camera.
Maybe that wouldn't work
for
him.
I don't know.
We need to speak to him and ask him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Alex. Phone in. Phone in now.
Oh, I do.
We're holding for you right now.
I do
Alex.
Love
holding.
Live podcasts. Yeah. So.
Either way, he's making good
yeah.
shots with it. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah, Dan. Yeah. He's not just going out and, you know, doing the test shots. It looks like he's really doing. My favorite of all these is like the pony. There's some really shaggy
yeah.
pony that is moving. It has moved its head during the exposure, and it looks to be like a very foggy gray day. You know, I mean, this could be.
No, that's just Wales. That's what it's like.
It looks like it's, you know, it could be on the steppes, you know, of Russia, or yeah. or Montana, or
it really isn't. So.
I've been to Wales.
The one between the horse and the alleged grandparents. I think it might be a dog or a cat, whatever it is. I love that
yes.
one as well. It's sitting
yeah,
on the windowsill,
yeah, yeah.
and it's obviously
yeah.
not playing ball. It's not posing.
What
is
I
it?
Love. Yeah, what I love about this shot is that there's so much light coming in that huge window, is that the cat is lit up and the cushion it's sitting on and the window, I guess, side sill is there. But yet outside has about the same exposure. And that's what really makes this picture to me is, and we're getting reflections off the glass. It just, it's dreamy, which is some of the effect that we like.
It
so you hear that, Alex? Graham
you're dreamy.
Thinks that you're dreamy.
You should swap numbers.
Exactly. But
I think the kids say,
There we go. Well, you're the one with kids of that age. So, or I'm guessing. How old are your kids?
Yep. The oldest
yeah,
is
16, yeah,
10, and 6.
See, you would know.
But they don't say hit me up. I hear yeah. other people say it.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Lines and,
yeah.
And packs and roving packs of young adults, I hear them, you know, over my shoulder and standing yeah. in the grocery store, you know.
Right. Yeah, well your kid just doesn't say it in earshot of you. You know, that's the deal.
I tell you the other picture which I really love, it's the one taken which I think is something to do with his wood burning stove. Zorkenstein's number one fan, which is almost looks like something Man Ray would have taken or somebody from the 1930s. It's an abstract image of a piece of iron machinery, which I think is a fan, and it's something to do with his, I think it's to do with his stove or his oven or something, he didn't say.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
He doesn't say
it. Yeah, it definitely has a Calder-esque shape to the to the metal, yeah. So,
just,
yeah, okay.
It's a beautiful abstract image.
Yeah. Wow, that would be, yeah, that's a fan. That's interesting.
I think it is. So, Graham, what about old folding cameras? I said old, in my notes, old folding rangefinders, but of course something like, you know, the Zeiss Netars and Agfa
yeah.
pins. Is it Toby
yeah.
who's made, is it
like,
Toby VD?
And I was going to say,
pin?
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
made the Agfa pin camera or something.
He, he battled with that one, man. He battled with that camera for a while, but I think he finally got it. Actually, I got the
Andrew,
email from him.
Andrew Sanderson has made one recently with a Netar, but he put his pinhole, he has the camera folded down, and he's got his pinhole there. And I like the idea of being able to extend the camera out, and Andrew was suggesting that wouldn't work so well because of the distance involved. But I thought, I don't know, it's going to be...
I think it, a part of the deal is that once again, what that does is it takes care of your film advance, which is some of the hardest. It takes care of a light tight box, does all that type of stuff. We have this this aesthetic that pinhole is very much a wide angle, a distorted wide angle view, and that's certainly part of it. And it can do a wide angle much more readily than a lensed camera because of all the physics that go into the lens and the expense that goes into the lens. I think that if you had, a lot of those folding cameras had, like 90, a 6x9 often has like a 110 lens or 100 lens. The 6x6s often had 80s, 75, 80, 90, somewhere in there.
Yep.
So that distance, that's going to give you a normal view on that film. That's going to give you a normal field of view, and I'm air quoting normal there, because I personally, when I shoot 35mm, I want a 40 to a 42 lens. That's normal to me, as opposed to the 50. I think the 50 is just mildly telephoto, so you get that kind of normal view, but you're putting your pinhole so far from the film that, the inverse square law of how much light hits that film from that distance really starts to affect the exposure time. And that's when things like pinhole calculator on Mr. Pinhole really come in. But there's no reason why on a folder you can't half fold it. Now, so you have it all the way back, or you have a middle stop, where you're shooting it. The big thing comes in with the optimal size of the pinhole versus the distance versus the film size. The distance to, the pinhole to film distance, and then, those start to really interact. And so I'm going to come back to what my aesthetic is for pinhole. I'm not one where I don't want a pinhole that is super sharp. I mean, it's nice. It's nice to have a pinhole that's super sharp, but that's not really what interests me. I'm kind of looking at that. I'm looking at the image that cannot be created by the human eye. The pinhole image with that super crisp laser drill, and all that type of stuff. It starts to get maybe a little bit too crisp for my aesthetic, because I want that other, I want a pinhole and all, alternative processes to me are all about getting an image that you can't get out of a DSLR, and that's so I don't really have much problem. You just have to.
I understand exactly what you're saying, and I too enjoy that. I enjoy the different aesthetics that you can get from pinhole, and going back to Alex's super wide 35mm camera, the one he has with the I don't know what they are. They could be butternut squash or little pumpkins or something on a cast iron table and chair. So they show that close up. They show that characteristic sort of super sharp thing, and we've all done that. I've got dozens of pictures on my streams of plonked right in front of beef burgers and ketchup bottles. But actually, look at the way it's rendering the back. That tree is all kind of distorted and faded, and that's You know, so you're getting that sharpness, but then you're getting this weird sort of distortion, aren't you, at the back? And that's really hard to duplicate elsewhere.
Yeah, and if you look at the chair that's in the center versus the chair that's in the right, on the right end, you know, that chair that's in the center is super sharp. Yeah. That's almost the point of focus as opposed to the to the squash.
That's true.
And then, you get that really distortion, and the vignetting is now one of the things with a pinhole is as you if the central portion of the image goes through a round hole, but as you get the light coming in from further and further and further off that perpendicular to the film plane light path, that pinhole, that circular pinhole, starts to get oval, more ovular, and it lets less light in because of the, you know, the thickness of the material that the pinhole's in. So, you know, that's part of it. And that's one of the things that I really like about this is that vignetting is very strong on this focal length. And that I fully agree, you know, and the farther out you go from the film plane, or the more towards the normal or the telephoto, you are, you know, straightening out those lines. They're more and more of it's through a circular hole, and it loses some of that distortion. I mean, it loses that really strong distortion, like what you have on the tree. That's one of the advantages or disadvantages. That's one of the changes in characteristic with using a folder if it were fully all the way out.
And of course, you can have all this fun and not spend much money, which is even better.
And
I was just about to say, so if you want to get a Zorky, you better grab it, because Alex is single-handedly raised the price of them.
Exactly. But those folders, seriously, on eBay right now, you can get folders in the $30. You know, and you get the cheap ones. Get the SpeedX. Get the Ansco SpeedX. Because it might have a shutter that works. So just take the lens off and just use the shutter that's on there. You know, it's never going to be super fast. And it can have some pretty good slow speeds that you can use.
And then, do any of those folders? And you only have a bulb
setting,
or
you
too.
Can
have
time. Yeah, you know.
I have In fact, I have three folders, but the two that I use mostly, these aren't converted to pinholes because I wouldn't want to do it. I have a Franke Solida 3, and that has an uncoupled rangefinder attached to it, and that just produces some cracking, beautiful images, and I've made some prints. Yeah.
Is that a 6x9?
No, that's a 6x6. But I have a Zeiss the Netar 6x9, which I picked that up last year sometime, and that was pretty mint copy. And I took that to Berlin with me in September, along with the Franke. So I just took these two folders with me. So, you know, I'm right in the sort of area that Nick Lyle likes to be with his folding cameras.
Right.
And I just, I was using them handheld, and I was shooting really quickly because I was just zone focusing or mostly hyperfocal. Yeah. I had a little rangefinder, but I gave up using it and just either guessed or set hyperfocal. And I've got some brilliant shots. And I've also got a little, I think it's a little lag for folder, and I keep looking at that on the shelf, and the bellows are a bit leaky, but I can fix that. And I think, well, that's a prime candidate for maybe fitting a pinhole on. I've got lots of these little projects for when I no longer work full time.
How big is the AGFA? Is it 6x6?
That's 6x6, yeah.
You know, you could do the same thing with the film can, but reverse it and have it come out a little bit, and that would give you a focal length of say 20, 25, somewhere right in there. And so you know, you take a piece of flat, I don't know, cardboard or plastic, and, you know, rip the bellows out. And believe me, I've ripped bellows off the front of cameras, and I feel bad every time because these are beautifully engineered things. But
yeah, this one, I'm never going to shoot this one, and I don't really, right, I don't, right, buy cameras for sitting on a shelf and look at them. I'm not a camera collector. If I've got a camera, right, I want to use it, you know?
Right. Yeah. And so you just put a piece of flat stock across the front and cut a hole the same size as the film can, cut the film can down about halfway, put a pinhole, yeah, in the end of that, and just, you know, use a tape.
I think I may do that, because once again, you've got your film transport sussed, haven't you? You don't need to, right, worry. You've got your spacing. And yeah. And I think that's going to be the way forward.
Yeah, that's... Mm. Those are good, the call, easiest pinholes to make. So, absolutely.
Corey.
Awesome. Andrew.
Holger.
Don't have silences. Don't have silences. I've got loads to talk about. I just don't want to take over. Holgers. Who wants to talk about Holgers?
Go ahead. I'm just listening.
I want to talk about Holgers. I want to talk about Holgers because you guys started talking about Holgers. You keep saying that you're going to do like a Holga podcast or podcast centered on Holgas.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's coming.
So is Christmas. That's coming.
Yeah. We're working
in
hard.
The background.
So do wash machines.
Yeah, right. In the background, working really hard.
Right. Well, I just recently got a Holga. And
what's taking you so long?
Part of the deal was that I had the FPP 645, whatever they call it, the Debonair.
And that is a proper bunch of crap.
That is a proper. That is a beautiful camera waiting to be made. Believe me. My particular one has. If you focus it, what it will do is the very center. It's myopic. Okay. The very center of it will be out of focus. Then there will be a ring of focus, and then everything outside of that ring of focus will be out of focus again. And that just drives me batty. So I borrowed one from Nick, and he told me that it was a gift, and he does not want it back because he didn't seem to like Holgers. But what I love about those plastic cameras are just, you know, the first of all, heavy vignetting, you know, that's all really nice, you know, real approximate images, real fuzzy images, but they, the ability to, multi-expose, to do multiple exposures on those things is just so simple. Sure. You know, it's just click, 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 click.
To a detriment sometimes, actually, because you're
kinda... Oh, right.
You're going to forget,
right,
about,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. So that's what I did with my first roll. I did multiple exposures. In fact, I even shot only half a roll. I had a half a roll in another camera, took it out and put it in the Holga and shot half a roll. And I got some stuff that I really, really liked doing that. And so I thought of this is something that's coming up because it's been shot. It's in my to be developed box of film. And I have a 90-minute drive commute through northern Florida. I go through the Ocala National Forest. And I start at right now. I leave my house at about 6:15 and it's dark. It is dead dark. But I go through a town and then, you know, and then the sun comes up as I'm going. So my idea was to take shots, one frame of film, and I took about 25 shots during that commute straight out the front of my car. I'm looking forward to seeing that type of thing. And that's something that, you know, you can't really do with other types of cameras as easily or as readily.
I was looking at analyzing my Flickr site the other day in anticipation of whether to pay for the new pro fee or scrap it altogether.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to have to carry on paying for it because anyway, that's another story. But
yeah.
The Holga, I've been shooting with Holgers for many years And I've got more pictures on Flickr from Holger than any other camera. And
yeah,
and I've got three Holgers, and I've got one that I use mostly because I just know exactly that it's where the sweet spot is. And it is pretty much in the center. And I can generally nail focus every time with this camera. Because I just, you use a camera so often, you get a, you know, it becomes second nature. So I know exactly where to set it to get, you know, if I'm doing someone's portrait, I know I can get pretty close. You know, it says a meter, but I think I'm slightly inside that.
Yeah.
And I just have to move the I look through the viewfinder and then I move it up slightly to take into account the parallax. And the portraits I make with the Holger, they're just stunning, if I do say so myself. I love them, you know. Other people might not like them, but I love them, and they give such a... And then you get all that sort of swirly stuff going on the edges. And I have two other Holgers, and they're all subtly different, but I haven't... The other two really I'm keeping in case this one breaks, but because I just know how this works so well. I don't have a pinhole Holger. I certainly don't have a pinhole wide Holger, but I do some double exposures, but not so many. Some of the lith prints I've been posting recently from the Holger are double exposures, and they're made in Liverpool at a place called Crosby Beach, and the sculptor Anthony Gormley has a static installation of about 200 bronze casts of his body in the sand, standing there. All along Crosby Beach, and it's called Another Place, and it's well photographed, you know. But I haven't seen any lith prints done with Holger double exposures before, so you can look at that.
Okay, so those are double exposures. So you took a picture of like the waves or the sand.
Yes, the sand, and then the picture of the head.
Okay, yeah. I've been looking at those, and I've been trying to kind of figure out what was going on with those. So
yeah, nothing complicated. Just point the camera at the ground, and then point the camera at the...
Yeah. I like doing those multiple exposures with my Instax camera, too. I think it's fun.
So when are we going to start an Instax podcast, Corey?
Uh-oh.
We're not going to. We're not going to. And I have a glass lens, Holger.
Yeah, Alex Yates has a glass lens. We met up over Christmas, and Alex had his glass lens Holger with him, and but I'm so pleased with the results I get from the plastic.
Each one is different. Yeah, sure. I mean, each one. I have plastic lens ones too, and I mean, each one's different. You know, it just depends on, you find one that you really like, and then just use that one. You know, I mean, and get what you want out of it.
So should I tell you about my camera hack? I've been inspired by the Homemade Camera podcast.
Right,
and,
sure.
And I was sitting there over Christmas looking at cameras on my shelf.
You've got 3 minutes, Andrew. No, I'm just picking.
And so, well, if you stop talking, I'll get on with it. So I have this...
All right.
I went through a phase. I'm still an instant film shooter, but I was really passionate about it for many years. And I bought a Polaroid Instant 20, which takes Type 80 pack film. And Type 80 pack film, that you can still buy it on eBay, but it's not so easy to find these days. So I thought,
Are you still using that? Are you using that with a Land camera?
Because it is a Land camera. SX70s have the name Land camera on, so it's just the Land camera is an early name for Polaroid. Edwin Land, when he first produced cameras, he called it a Land camera because that was his name. So this is a pack film camera, but the pack film is slightly smaller than like FP100C, for example.
Uh-huh.
But it works in the same way. So you unclip it. I've got it in my hands now. You open the back, and there are some rollers in the back which you pull through. You pull the film through in exactly the same way as you would a pack film camera. But you can take that out. So I took out the roller elements, and it left a sort of bumpy plastic door, which is 5x4. But so all I've done is cut three pieces of wood and stuck those in there to give a flat plane. And I've measured it I measured the distance to the lens, and it's about 70 mil. And I reckon it's F8. So I've got an idea of the focal length and the aperture. But I'm thinking of making it into a pinhole lens because it's got a shutter on it, and it's got at the moment, it's got a lens that focuses, so it's got 1 meter to infinity, and it's got an electric eye. But if I put some that stuff that you don't know what it is, blue tack, little or black tape. So I've stuck some blue tack over the electric eye, which means when I hold the, and it has two AA batteries, when I hold the shutter open, it just stays open. So I've got a bulb mode. And I'm going to just use this, first of all, with fitting some 5x4 paper in there.
Uh-huh.
And when I close the back, I think it's going to just hold it flat enough. But then I'm going to, once I've played around with that, I think I'm going to just work out how to remove the lens with as little violence as possible. But I can I can imagine that I'm going to end up putting a screwdriver under it and just levering it off, because that's about so. Because when I look inside past the battery compartment, I can see the lens, but I'm not sure if it's an easy way. I'm not sure there's a non-violent way to remove the lens. So if anybody out there has any experience in the camera hack world, Polaroid Instant 20, which is a Type 80, it's got a viewfinder on the top, so that's nice, you know, but that's
nice.
Yeah, it's got a viewfinder on the top. It's got a timer. There you go. It's got some kind of crazy Polaroid timer on, which is going to keep going now because I don't know how to stop it.
That's just to tell you when it's done. Yeah.
Developing,
but you could pull it apart.
Yeah. No, I can't stop it, so I don't know if you can hear it or not, but I apologize for the time again.
Yeah, we can hear
it. Oh, okay. So the Instant 20 is the same thing as the Swinger, I think, isn't it?
I think it might be. Yes, I think I think the Swinger, and there's and it has a tripod socket, mount, which is good.
Ooh.
So this is a great camera to just mess around with paper. Yeah, it's okay. Only another 60 seconds to go. When it stops, it'll be the end of the podcast.
It's so gonna blow.
Take the rollers out and do something inside the door to give it a flat surface, and then you can go and shoot paper negatives pretty much off the box, pretty much out of the box, you know. And then you can convert this bad boy to a pinhole. So I might, if this works, I might find another one and keep one with a lens on it and one as a pinhole. It says here, look, color, C-O-L-O-R, so it's clearly they can't spell, color-corrected, color-corrected, coated, Polaroid, polar triplet, lens. And then there's some, it says 9.4/112. Not sure what that is.
Yeah,
so this has got a Polaroid polar triplet coated, color corrected. Yeah, get that.
Wow.
Lens.
So smash that bad boy right out of there.
No, I'm tempted to keep it and buy another one and
no, keep it and make a lumen box with it.
Okay.
That's what you got.
There you go.
Well, whatever I've got here, it's now I've whipped the rollers out and hacked the back to take so it's got a fairly flat film plane. I've got a pretty versatile camera to play with.
So now that you took the rollers out, you won't be able to use any of the new.
Well, that wouldn't fit in here anyway. That wouldn't fit in here. The Type 80 film.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I have a pack film camera anyway, a Polaroid 103, which is the Polaroid 103 is a glass lensed camera like the 100 series, but it has a plastic body. So people don't buy those, but it's a great camera, the Polaroid 103.
I have the 450.
I think mine's a 105. Maybe mine is a 450. I can't remember.
It's the 450 or the 250s. Anyways. The 250s have the different range finders. Some of them have the Zeiss range finder on. But anyway, you know, it's instant film, isn't it?
And the Instant 20 is part of the same series as the Swinger, but it's not the identical.
Meet the Swinger, the Polaroid Swinger. That's one of the adverts.
There we go.
Fantastic. Yeah. They were the days.
That's way.
And it's got the rainbow on the front as well. So this Instant 20 has the Polaroid rainbow on the front. It's got you can fit flash cubes on, if you can find them, and it has two batteries in, and it has an electric eye for determining the exposure, and it has two apertures, one at f/8 and one for 3000B. So it has a pack film camera. You can change it from 3000B to 78 or ISO 100 in effect.
Wow.
Is it a black plastic body?
It is a black plastic with the rainbow running. Yeah. The rainbow runs horizontally underneath the color corrected, coated, Polaroid, polar triplet lens.
Polygon.
I was going to say, take it outside and use it to magnify and burn ants, but you don't have any sun there. He doesn't have any sun.
No, it's always pitch black outside now.
It's not a
fire. So I think I'm going to try and find another one of these because I don't want to. I want to shoot it with the lens because I can focus. You know, it's got and it's got focus markings on it, and with let's and I can now I've got blue tack over the hole. I can just hold the lens open.
Yeah,
with my finger. I can't because I can't put a. You can't put. It's got a lock on the. On the trigger on the button, you know, so you don't shoot it or
the trigger.
So you don't go off prematurely. And it's got a little funky handle thing. It's got a strap, but it's got a little plastic T-shaped rubber handle thing, so you can just swing it along nonchalantly, you know.
It's great. Like this
right. Here.
Meet the swinger, the Polaroid swinger.
You know, if you do completely, ruin it, make sure you take off the viewfinder because you can use that viewfinder for something else.
Yeah, that view.
You're quite the recycler, Graham. My gosh.
The viewfinder appears to be, if I grab hold of it, it's a bit wobbly, so I reckon that would come off quite easily.
Yeah.
And because it's only really useful for the... Yeah, with that lens on. Once I put a pinhole on it, then it's not really
right. Well, no, it should be fine because you put a pinhole at the same location as the lens, you're going to get the same field of view.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I'm so stupid, aren't I? Anyway,
that's another podcast.
You can mention me next time you talk to Nick.
Yes, and say, absolutely.
Say that we've discussed the Polaroid Instant 20, which I think is a really good starting point for someone wanting to play around with paper negatives without too much pain.
Even this would make a good lumen if it has a bulb, any sort of bulb mechanism.
Well, it only does if you stick blue tack over the magic eye, so you can just hold it open, you know.
Okay.
But you've got to find a source of blue tack first in the States.
Yes, yeah.
You've got to go to the UK and get it. That's the only place it's sold in the world.
That'll be 35 pounds shipping, so.
Geographical oddity, you know. Only find it in World Boys.
Why is this a geographical oddity? hey, can I mention the Film Podcast Network? Okay, so.
Of course.
Film Podcast Network was actually started in reaction to your podcast. And what happened was I had about a year after Sunny 16 started, I stumbled across it and started listening to it. And I'd been listening to the FPP for, I don't know, a couple of years at that point. And I was listening to Sunny 16, and Graham mentioned that you had a podcast that you were starting with Mark, or you had already started it. That was what the deal was. I think that you were two episodes in or something like that. I just went, how am I going to find all these? So I kind of solved that for myself by creating a website called the filmpodcastnetwork.com. And what I do on that website is I list podcasts. Like I think Matt Loves Cameras, Matt Loves Film, Matt Loves one of those two things. I got it wrong the first time when I listed it and he kindly corrected it. So that's the most recent one. I think that we're up to 21 different podcasts.
Have you got WTF? What the film?
Yes. No. Because I've been trying to get a hold of that guy and he gives no contact information.
No, he doesn't say who he is, does he?
Right.
He's just some. I think he's Mr. Mysterious.
Right, right, exactly. So no, I do not have
another M.
Yeah. And yeah. You'll have Soot and Whitewash, Neil Piper's podcast
on
that.
Yeah.
What about the other one I haven't listened to is Uncle Jonesy's, started by those two brothers, aren't they? Uncle Jonesy's Cameras or something?
I've not heard anything about that. So no, here's...
And Viewfinder Vikings. Viewfinder Vikings.
I do have... Yeah, I have Sven's. Let's see. And I have two... I have one in German, which is one of Chris Marquardt's deals. He does... The Future of Photography with Adrian from Sunny 16. But he also has Absolute Analog, and I have a list to that. That's in German. And then Jonas and Sina, we just talked about him, called Matorn. They do one in Swedish, and I can't even tell you what the name of this is. I think it might be some swear, you know, some...
It's probably full of sex. That's why it's Swedish.
Like the Swedish films from the 50s. Is that what the thing that you're talking about?
70s.
70s. Okay. I don't know. It's before my
time. I'm not that old. You're older than... You don't even remember the ones from the
50s. They were much more interesting in the 70s as opposed to the 50s ones. They were kind of boring.
But this could just be... I've not listened to it to verify it, but it could just... The title could be something like "We sucker Graham into listening us," but Matt Loves Cameras is the latest one. Like 10 rolls of film, Island by Film, which is a guy on Vancouver Island. Soot and Whitewash, film podcast, film photography podcast that came in. Analog Talk, classic lenses, Light in the Dark. All those, here's a couple of things. If you guys know of a podcast out there, and you know who does it, and you know who the email address of the person who does it, tell them to go to filmpodcastnetwork.com, and there's a form to fill out, and I will list your podcast. It is completely, I will not,
cool.
Absolutely not charge anybody for it, either the user or the listeners, and I'm never going to put advertising on it. I just do it because I love film podcasts, film photography podcasts.
That's awesome. So check it out, everybody. Filmpodcastnetwork.com.
Absolutely.
So it's okay if you've got a job that enables you to listen to these things all day long. I mean, I download mine onto my podcast app on the phone, and I listen to mine when I'm driving. And I'm often driving for a few hours at a time, but not every day. But boy, there are just so many now, and it is hard to keep up. It is hard to keep up. But that's a great resource. I know M from Emulsiv did something similar last year.
Right.
So I don't know how up-to-date his is, but I was aware that you already had yours out there and that it was pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, and it's cool. Some of these have probably gone dormant since I put them up. I don't listen to them all. But I easily listen to 70% of these.
You have 90
minutes each direction, morning and night. So,
do you listen to your own podcast?
I do. You guys don't do heavily, you know, you piece together, but you don't do, editing.
No.
But I edit mine. And,
really?
This last
yours is very professional. The way I love your little way you put yours together. It's very simple, but actually very effective.
Yeah, and a lot of it was pulled off Sunny 16. The way they did music breaks is just direct copy of theirs. The thing about it though is it takes me about 3 hours per hour. And our podcasts are usually about 2 hours, but they're every other week, you know. So there's that. But then this last time we have Ethan Cameradactyl on the podcast, and so now I have three channels to mute the little
I saw the screenshot. All that kind of stuff. Yeah, I saw the screenshot of this, all those little sound waves, and I thought, boy.
And Ethan's was recorded in stereo, and ours is mono, and
Andrew said, "Boy, there's no way Corey could handle that."
Well, yeah, I think now that Anchor has kind of upped its game a bit, we don't have too many technical issues. And we kind of like just recording for an hour, as I said, at 74 minutes and 15 seconds. We like to record for about an hour and just have a conversation with folks. And as long as, you know, it's never good. We haven't found the need to edit things, really, because no one's really been particularly abusive to us yet.
Yeah, you can cut out a whole section, you know, if you have to.
Although you can do some minor edits, can't you, on Anchor?
Yeah.
I think you can do it now. The facility is there, but Corey doesn't really have the time, and neither do I. You
know. And also,
I use it for the end, whenever at the end of the show, whenever I do like that 30-second outtake.
Yeah.
They have a trim out and an add to. A little toolbar thing that you can use, and it shows up, and you can move
that
must slides
be, that's
and
new, isn't it? Because when I did those two or three podcasts without you, I certainly didn't have that facility. Yeah.
And
it came way out after that.
And we host ours through Podbean, which I think is great. But I have one of the guys I teach with at work. He just started a movie podcast. And I said, and they've recorded a couple episodes, but they haven't gotten the host. I said, host it through Anchor, because, you know, Anchor now allows you to upload, right? Because that's what Mike does for
Mike and
negative
guys,
positives.
Yeah.
So why would you do anything other than Anchor right now? I can't figure out why you do anything other than Anchor. It wasn't at that state 6 months ago when we started, or 9 months ago when we started.
Yeah.
So I fully believe in Anchor.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, how does it? I'm not sure how it makes money. Right. But perhaps it doesn't.
They do. Yeah. You can put ads on your show. You can do it.
Oh yeah,
You can monetize through that.
You can. Yeah, I've had an email about that.
Yeah. And
me too.
And if you do that, then they take a 30% cut. Of the ad, you know, I think is decent, for them doing the hosting.
But think about it realistic. I mean, how much money are we talking about? I don't want to put commercials and ads just for my listeners to have to listen to. They're not coming here for that. I mean, we're only doing this an hour a week.
It's 76 minutes.
Right. So.
76 minutes a week.
Here's what I would say for money. It's per 1,000 impressions. So if you had 1,000 people listen to every episode, you could get like $20 an episode for one per ad.
Oh wow!
So maybe they'll do it now.
My God!
So it's not my.
We have nowhere near 1,000 people an episode.
we're running at right about 215 on ours. So
yeah,
it'd take.
We get a little bit more than that, man. We're at about 400 or so.
Takes a long time to monetize.
So yeah,
well, we are up to 500.
I'm just enjoying.
As I try and draw this to a close, we are now up to 518 members on the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, which is, and we have Mr. Zero Camera himself joined last week. The man behind, Mr. Zero.
Ah.
Yep, I didn't realize it was him until. I didn't realize it was him. He just introduced himself as Hong Kong-based, been making pinhole cameras for years. And then someone, maybe one of our, I don't know, it was Andrew Sanderson, someone said, hello, Mr. Zero, or Mike Walker said it or something. Mm-hmm. I went, oh, wow, we've got Mr. Zero.
Mm.
So
cool. I didn't even realize it. People are joining so fast that I can't even keep up with the list.
Don't
of,
worry. They're all Russian posted...
Yeah. Well, Andrew posted a welcome thing. Hey, welcome to all the new members. And there was, my God, there was 15 of them.
Yeah, one of them a couple of weeks ago was my wife, Alex Purcell, let her in. I don't...
yeah, yeah.
So now she gets... I can't say anything now.
She says,
Alex.
Who's this? Why are you saying that? Oh, God. What, that's Alex Purcell. So then then I made Alex get his wife involved. So Kimmy Purcell is now a member as well, so... I don't know whether she listens, but she's also on the group.
nice revenge.
So you can find us. You all can find us at the Lenses Podcast Facebook group. You can email us if you wish. We don't get many emails, mm-hmm. do we, Corey? At the Lensless Podcast at yahoo.com, maybe?
.com. Yep.
You can follow us on Instagram.
Yep.
Can't you? Somewhere?
Oh, yeah. The show is pretty much on my Instagram page at Pinhole Cannon.
And Graham?
Graham?
Yeah. On Instagram, I'm Graham Homemade Camera, and it's spelled correctly, G-R-A-H-A-M. And then I am Freezer of Photons, all one word, on Flickr. And I'm also Graham at homemadecamera.com. And I do the Homemade Camera podcast, which is comes out on the 7th and 21st of every month. Is.
And I've learned loads.
Ah, cool. Good.
Awesome.
I just do it because I want to talk awesome. About it, but I want to just chat.
Yep.
Cool.
Right.
Well, everybody, thanks for hanging out and listening. Graham, thanks for coming and doing a two-part
with us.
Thank you
for having me.
Yeah, cool. And we'll talk to everybody next week. We hope everybody has a great week.
Indeed. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
I thought now you've got your cupboard to broadcast from, you'd be very professional.
That's right. He's
I'm actually
under the
bed right now. I'm laying in bed. I'm not even at my nook.
I was gonna say it's big enough to get a queen size bed in the cupboard. That's not much of a cupboard.
Yeah, I know, right?
But you have toilet rolls, so that's always a result, isn't it?